Hey folks, this is a little pre-podcast message to let you know that this episode was recorded a little while before it was released. Between the time we recorded it and released the episode, the single-use plastic laws in New Zealand did come into effect and some other things happened too. So if you think a couple of bits sound weird, that's the context. Now with that out of the way, let's hear from our fantastic sponsor for this episode.
Thanks heaps to Huckleberry, your organic grocer, who believe in organics for everyone. Head into your local Huckleberry to make the most of their weekly specials or shop online at huckleberry.co.nz. Hey everyone, welcome back to How to Save the World. I'm Waveney.
And I am Tim.
Hey Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, yeah, how you doing?
Good and slightly hungry and possibly a little iron deficient.
Iron deficient?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not.
That's good.
I've been iron deficient in the past, but...
You sorted it out.
Yeah, had those little pills.
Yeah.
That are supposed to like make you constipated.
And you didn't have that?
No, I didn't have that.
Hey, congrats.
Yeah.
It's great to hear.
I won't inquire after you. It's fine. We'll just...
I will give a full up-to-date report on the podcast of how it all goes. The reason why I might be a little bit iron deficient is I'm rebalancing at the moment because I've decided to try veganism for 1 month.
Oh, because you were just a vegetarian.
Yeah, I was pescatarian before, so I was still eating seafood and stuff.
So you've jumped right over vegetarian.
I have. I've bunny hopped it. Has it
kicked in like...
Probably not.
Prior... Is it because you've gone vegan for a month?
Yeah.
Iron's reacted that quickly to
it? Well, I'm guessing. I'm throwing it out there. I feel slightly tight. It's probably got more to do with the fact that I've also got a young puppy who wakes up in the middle of the night.
Do you think that makes you iron deficient? I don't know.
But fun little experiment to see.
And so do you hope that you can actually be vegan?
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite interesting going from mocking vegans for like 15 years to becoming one.
How's that going for you?
It's going okay so far. It turns out salads are really easy. Do you know?
Turns out salad's nice.
Yeah, you keep going, what do you eat now? What can you eat? And it's like, eat quite a lot of salads, to be honest. I've got to get better at things like tofu and meat alternatives. Some of it's really expensive, though, like that sun-fed
chicken.
And
packaged. How are you getting on with the packaging? I have found that before with some quite crazy alternative-y things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well... The packaging thing I'm certainly more cognizant of after our chat about packaging, but I'm focusing on the vegan diet.
Do it one step at a time. So what was your motivation?
Water, mainly.
What? To going vegan?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, water usage.
Wow.
There was, and I've heard a lot of stats from all over the shop, but there was quite a clarifying episode of a... there's a Netflix show that Vox make. Vox are like a media company in America, and it's called Explained, and it's a web series based on their podcast called Today Explained, and they've got one on water, and they basically go, hey, guess what, everyone? We are completely out of fresh water.
Yeah.
And then they talk about like there's that stat that it takes about 15,000 litres of fresh water to make 1 kg of beef. And it takes about 1/100th of that to make like 1 kg of cabbage.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's just around that thing. I like to live in a way where if the majority of people were going to replicate the way I live,
exactly.
Then we
I'm
would
into
probably
that too. Yeah.
Be in a good
yeah.
spot.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying where I can to make those shifts.
Yeah.
So
I find it interesting that we're both going down quite different paths.
Yeah.
It's like same logic and stimulus and...
We're getting the same intel, but we've
we're making quite different. Yeah, it's quite interesting that.
Yeah.
Like, I find it a challenge. I do quite like my meat.
Yeah.
And now you've gone one step further and knocked out cheese.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
It is. Yeah. See, that's a big one for the packaging as well. It's really hard to get cheese without plastic.
Yeah, well, I guess it's got to be basically hermetically sealed, right, for it to stay all good. I don't know. All these interesting wee challenges.
So you're doing a month challenge and actually you're finding it fine.
I have set myself a month. It's not
how
like...
How far through are you?
As of recording, 1 week. 1 week. And I did about 2 days before at the end of last month so I could just get a little ramp into it, you know?
Run up.
A run up. because I figured I'll screw it up at some point. And I have, I've had some stuff where I accidentally ate something and then went, oh crap, there's an egg product on it.
Now are you hectic? That, maybe that's why I haven't partly done it, because it means you have to get quite focused and you're all looking at the ingredients and then you have to get online and work out what things mean and what additives are.
It's true.
Yeah.
But it has never, ever been easier in the history of time to do this sort of stuff, to either go vegetarian or vegan or whatever. Just especially being in a big city, you're so well catered for, and there's so many great websites and resources. The biggest thing for me is someone put me on to, I've forgotten the name of it, but it's the first search result that comes up on Google when you look up beers to see if they're vegan. So it's just a big laundry list of all these different alcohols to tell you whether or not it's vegan. So I like go into bars and I'm like, oh, it turns out most beers these days are vegan.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's wine is a little bit different because they use fish scales for, I think, some of the filtration process.
What about egg yolk?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. There's something to do with that with wine as well. We'll get into that in a future episode, I'm sure. We should do a booze episode.
Oh, yeah.
But terms of the beer thing, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, well, it's good for rubbish as well. It was a delight to learn that most of the time it's, you can get it very easily.
Are you talking beer?
Alcohol generally.
Right.
Like, the worst you could do is get it in a recyclable container, and then the best you could do would be to sit at the pub and have a beer with all of the kegs and the refillable everything.
And if you get crafty on it these days, you can bring your own, what are they called?
Yes, flagons.
Flagon,
yeah. That's a word that might need some explanation.
It's just a big jug of beer.
You got
it's
your
a stein,
flagon.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll give updates, but It's definitely, I think, a little bit harder than when I went from full meat eating to pescatarian, which I did a couple of years ago. It is slightly
is it?
More, yeah, it is, I think, slightly harder.
So you found it easier
that.
To give up meat,
yeah,
generally?
I think so.
Then, huh. Oh, I guess, yes, actually, that makes sense.
There's more tricky little things.
Yeah, exactly, the
tricky
things.
The meat thing's very obvious. It's like, is this a steak? No? Okay, cool, I can eat it.
Yeah, that's the level I'm at too with the plastic. Is this plastic?
Exactly.
Yeah,
so now you've got to look stuff up. Although Oreos and Skittles, both vegan, I found out, to my great delight.
Excellent.
Yes.
I don't know. The overall sustainability footprint of Skittles would be amazing, but...
Probably not great.
Doesn't matter,
does Baby
it?
Steps waving
in. One
thing
it's demystifying and uncomplicating things, isn't it? So that we can take steps.
Exactly.
If you try to do it all at once.
Exactly.
It's exactly, similar journey. It's like, screw it, I'm going to do a thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is.
Because we're not experts, right?
No.
And to be able to take action and know that it's actually meaningful and really doing something without having to be an expert and weighing. Actually, I used to get quite weighed down myself, but then particularly if just with speaking with people, there's always those questions of is it better to be organic or local or organic or packaged?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just do not engage in any of that now.
Great.
It's like, it's just
do something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the fact that you're doing that's something and even thinking about it.
Maybe that's what we should have called this podcast. Just do something.
Do something. Yeah. Totally. But, today I thought we could, anything more on the veganism?
No, I'll keep you updated, but that's it. There's a whole delicious world of food out there, people, that don't involve animal products. So it's certainly not impossible.
You don't feel deprived?
I wouldn't say that, but I'm
quickly move on.
It's worth it,
yeah,
is what I would say so
awesome.
Far. We'll see how I feel at the end of the month.
I'll look forward to hearing more. Maybe I could do a vegetarian week. That would have actually, I'd do that without even, I'd do that anyway. So we've got the plastic bag ban in New Zealand.
Why are we getting rid of them?
So a plastic single-use bag is bad because it's plastic, it's single-use, and it's a bag. So,
well, it's been a great podcast, everyone. Tune in next episode where we break down three words again for you.
So plastic is a baddie because it lasts forever. It's that's a contested point. We actually don't know how long plastic lasts, but it causes issues in the environment, because even when it breaks into millions of little pieces that we can't see, it doesn't change its state.
Right.
It remains plastic, and it gets into, eventually gets into the very basic food chain molecules.
And it starts accumulating, right? Because when stuff consumes an organic material that doesn't break down, it starts small, like
mercury in big fish.
Yeah.
As you keep eating it and eating it higher up the food chain. So that's like a really human-centric.
Do you want to just really quickly like explain that phenomenon a little bit? And maybe the fish thing is a good metaphor for this.
The plastic, let's say it's 1,000 years from now and it's broken down into lots of tiny little pieces. And then it gets eaten by something that just assumes it's food. Maybe it can't even see the difference. Then that thing in turn gets eaten by something. And because there's the plastic inside of it that is never breaking down, it actually gets absorbed into your cells and other functional parts of your body. And then it just basically stays in the food chain. So whatever eats that thing.
So we've got algae is a bad example. The tiny little fish is eating a tiny little amount of this plastic.
Yeah.
And then slightly bigger fish are eating all those little fish.
Yes. And they metabolize the fish, but not the plastic.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, of course, because the rest of that material is organic, so it can be processed in the right way.
Yeah.
Plastic can't because it isn't. It's petrochemical.
Yeah.
And then,
These chemicals that don't bond with water in the ocean.
Hydrophobic?
Oh, that's it. Yes. Thank you. And they bond with the plastic. So plastic in itself can be quite inert, but what tends to happen in the ocean is that these tiny molecules bond with all of these particles and they get very, very toxic. So the toxins themselves can be an issue, not the plastic, but the actual toxin that's bound with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's like a little sponge for these toxins?
Yes, it is. Oh, it's like a little sponge. And the longer it sticks around, the worse it gets. And then there's the physicality of plastic too, the fact that it can be mistaken for food, like a larger chunk and fed by parents to their babies, and it just clogs up the baby's stomachs and they die.
In the animal world, presumably, not humans are doing that.
I don't know of any humans doing that. So that's plastic, and then you've got the single-use element of it? Because, I mean, there's so many things that are plastic that are actually quite useful, and we actually do intend to use them. And they're quite valuable to us. But to use plastic, which is an amazing material, for a single use function, it's this crazy thing we've gotten used to, that we're using something once and something that is actually designed to last forever.
Yeah.
Like you say, what did you say? I have to take that bag because I'm coming home and I don't have any, and so I have to take the thicker one.
Well, like I don't drive, so I don't them in my car.
So how did we get into this headspace where it's like, yeah, I have to have that bag because I'm in this situation where I'm not driving or whatever it is. Maybe you've got some screaming kids in the car and you have to because everyone's hungry. But we forget because it's this thing that's so normal for us. But these bags or any plastic is, put it this way, any plastic that hasn't been burned ever is still here. And we're just getting started. Like, it doesn't go anywhere. We don't know how long it takes to break down. We know that it's going to be causing problems for thousands of years.
That's such a terrifying way to put it. Because we haven't even had plastic that long.
Exactly. It hasn't really been 100 years, especially of this large-scale disposable, which is the big issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that gets me more than anything, is that we're using this, what could be a precious, an amazing resource.
Yeah.
I saw this video that was filmed in the 50s or maybe around that time, of a scientist had a glass bottle and he dropped it on the ground and it shattered. And then he had the new plastic technology and he dropped that on the ground and it didn't break. And he said, this is the most amazing technology ever. We're only ever going to need one of these and it's going to last us decades because you can't break it.
He got it a bit wrong. Oh, no. Actually, we got it a bit wrong. He got it dead right.
That's
how we should have been using it.
Yeah. But so that's the second aspect of it. And then the third aspect of what's particularly wrong with a single-use plastic bag is the fact that it's a bag, which is an interesting one because it's really lightweight. And so particularly bags have just gotten into the marine environment because they fly around and they're hard to kind of keep in one place. In a landfill, if a bag actually, well, when they do successfully make it to landfills, they're inert.
What does that mean?
Inert is it just sits there
without
any chemical reactions. There's no light in a landfill.
Oh,
there's
interesting.
No, air.
It's not transforming into some other substance that can seep into something. It's
ironically,
just the plastic.
The thing that's really toxic and bad in a landfill is like a paper bag.
Why?
Because it's... So it's the, I think it's the carbon. Yes, it's the carbon in paper or wood or vegetable scraps or just anything that's ever been alive. Like if we were to throw a dead cat in or something. I don't know.
Pretty extreme,
but it has happened. So anything that's ever been alive, when that breaks down in these conditions in the landfill, without air, without light, rather than breaking down in the normal way, which is fantastic.
Well, that's
how we have compost how we grow our food and that's where life comes from. And that's the good way
the
to return it to the earth.
Organic cycle
exactly.
of carbon. Yeah.
yeah. But when you interrupt that and you put it in a landfill with other toxins, like one example would be in wood, when you treat it, you've created a very toxic product.
Yeah.
And then those toxins eventually, over hundreds of years, that wood will break down, releasing methane all the time.
Right.
And so it's as organic stuff breaks down in a landfill, that you get the methane, which is 23 times worse than carbon dioxide. So it's a really, really bad global greenhouse gas.
And is there... Would that methane be released into the atmosphere? Like, is the problem with the landfill that it's all concentrated into one location? Or is it the fact that there's these chemicals that have sort of bonded with the carbon product and that's creating going on?
It's particularly that it's anaerobic, so no air.
So that actually changes the release of...
Yes,
you normally
it's not
wouldn't
the fact
get...
that it's all together. Normally you wouldn't get it at all.
Right.
In fact, usually it would be... sequestered. So in other words, if it was wood or banana peels or whatever, and an environment, say in the forest or in a compost heap, it's then used as an input for more carbon to grow, whether it's a tree or... So I'm just going back to the plastic bag thing.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned that we will, rather than looking at this a bit deeply and going, yeah, I get it. I have to take my own bags. It's not that hard. I'll give it a go. That we will go, oh, it's not fair. I want a bag provided. And everyone will jump up and down. And next thing, there'll be these paper bags going out. And then we'll be throwing them in the landfill.
Which will create a huge
amount
of methane.
Yeah, more in terms of a landfill and in terms of methane will create more problems than plastic bags in landfills.
Wow, that's interesting. So the one difference that there will be, I would assume, is that with paper bags, if they get into the marine environments, that the impact isn't as great because paper does break down.
If a paper bag ends up in the marine environment or any other environment, if it's thrown around on the street or what have you, totally fine.
Yeah. I'm assuming there's some chemicals that treat the, like, maybe colour the paper or something which maybe seep in, but I don't know what concentrations.
But that's a really good point.
They would be at.
Yeah, and I think often it's a brown paper bag, isn't it, for shopping? So hopefully we just keep rolling with that and don't decide. It's when you decide you want your paper bright white that you...
A bleached one or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think those bleaches are quite harmful.
That's so interesting. So with these single-use... plastic bags, like, we've already we've been using them for so long.
Yeah.
For so many decades, and there's so many, and they're just sitting around, not breaking down in the place where we buried them.
That's right. They'll be, that's the best scenario.
They don't go anywhere.
That's what you want them to be.
We keep adding to the number, but there's no way for the number to reduce in terms of like the mass of plastic.
Yeah, yeah. So just to qualify that, because I'm sure it'll be popping into people's heads, there is waste energy, which is when you burn your rubbish to create energy. In New Zealand, that's not a great option at all, and it's quite arguable overseas as well, because the infrastructure for that is really expensive, and so it actually ironically creates this need for whatever, whether it was the council, whoever it was that bought it, to feed it with waste.
Because you need an incredible amount of heat, right?
Which means you need a lot of fuel. So it's... And then I think, well, I don't know. I've heard that you can have some pretty amazing sort of extractor and systems that mean that the off-gassing isn't too bad.
They can capture the things like methane and other bad gases that are coming off of that fire.
Yes.
Supposedly.
But not in a bulletproof sort of a way. It sort of depends on who you've gotten to do the study.
Sure. Okay.
But the main thing about that is that waste is a resource. We really need to be thinking of waste as a resource. And
rather than a fuel.
Yes. Like, we don't need it, particularly in New Zealand. We've got clean energy here. We've got the hydro and solar's coming on. And
this is really interesting for me because I can't remember what country actually has them. It's one of the Scandinavian countries, right?
Yeah, the Scandis have them,
Norway or something. Yeah. That's got these underground furnaces that burn rubbish at a huge scale to generate energy.
Mm.
And I always thought, like, surely that's the dream. Like, we should all be doing that. But I can totally understand why that would be an issue, in that it creates a constant need for you to keep up that amount of rubbish going in.
If we were in a different scenario where we weren't running out of resources, then maybe that would be a nice, easy thing to do. But given we're running out of wood, running out of everything, why have the system where we're so good at stripping things out really fast from the environment, using it once and chucking it? We need to just keep on working on how we can create these loops. And the other thing is employment. If we don't burn our waste, we have a great opportunity to create lots of jobs as well.
Because we've still got this resource that we need to do
exactly
something with.
Exactly, and people need to, whether it's denail the wood, or artists might use all sorts of things to create products. Like, I bought a pair of jandals once. They're made out of an old conveyor belt strip.
That's got my brother actually got me a really cool shoulder bag that's made out of an old billboard.
I've got a bag made out of bike inner tubes.
Awesome.
Sewn together. It's really cool. So I'm glad all of that stuff didn't go up in smoke. So that's one. And so the plastic chemical sort of footprint of plastic, even after it's burned, is still there. Like, it doesn't just disappear. It just turns into a gas that's in the atmosphere. And the other thing that people might be thinking as well, you can recycle plastic.
Hey, Waveney, you can recycle plastic, though.
So, hey, Tim, when you recycle plastic, it's not alchemy. Like, it's still plastic when you've recycled it. It doesn't turn into anything.
It turns into other kinds of plastic.
That's right. And what happens to that plastic? Like, all it is just part of it's just on its journey to landfill. Like, unless we're genuinely going to create a product that we're going to all love for the next 1,000 or so years and use, it's like we're thinking, oh great, we've created, you know, a plastic park bench, and we'll be stoked if we get 10 years out of it. This episode of How to Save the World is brought to you by Huckleberry.
Huckleberry are amazing. Did you know that at Huckleberry, you can head into store for a free 15-minute consultation with a qualified naturopath who will formulate personalized herbal remedies and recommended supplements especially for you?
I did know that. Did you know that you can even ask for help when selecting personal care products for your face and body?
I did not know that. They sound like the most helpful people on earth.
They are.
I'm going to find my local Huckleberry right now at huckleberry.co.nz. So here is, I think, the reason why we've got so much plastic, and a concept that I've been thinking about a little bit recently, we've missed this. There's a real crucial bit missing at the moment where the money that it costs to produce these things doesn't represent at all. There's no priced in bit of the harm it's doing. And that is like such a hard thing to change, because it's very sort of, it's like a real philosophical change that needs to happen.
Yeah, especially when it's just left to us as consumers who might not be experts.
Well, it can't be, right? Like, for this is the thing I've been thinking about, is that there's kind of no way for individuals, that's not a function that individual people, individual humans and agents can do. That has to be a collective action from on high, from governments.
Like, what specifically?
Making it the expense of these products and these processes reflect the actual cost.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
And how do you do that? You would have to, you do things like you tax it, and then that money goes into trying to restore some of the environment that you're destroying with this process. Because it's just like, it's this whole chunk of reality that we're just ignoring.
Oh, absolutely. And then
it's just being left out of the whole thing.
Flip side of what you're saying is what we've got now, which is voluntary standards. So, and that's what these big businesses or any business will argue, is that, they'll showcase people doing some great stuff and say, it's just so much better for us. And look, we're already acting in this space. So just leave us alone and let us continue on this journey towards sustainability.
It's the government's job. Mm. We've got to lobby the government to change the rules because the corporations will always maximize their profits. Mm. It's what they're there to do. That is their sole job. So we're targeting the wrong people. We need to change the law because the corporations have to obey the law. They'll do everything they can to not, and they'll do everything they can to change it in their favor. But like us boycotting products and, you know, doing social media campaigns and hashtags and stuff for you know, an individual company is like not where the energy needs to be spent. We need to change the rule book, surely.
I agree with you, but it's more like a, I don't know. I feel like it's more complex because I think that boycotting and the way we consume is actually very important as well.
Yeah. I think both are possible simultaneously as well. It's not like you have to pick one. But.
No. And I think it's also that political chicken and egg thing too, where, so if you're the government, you're saying you're wanting to do some great innovative legislation around sustainability, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place when you've got big businesses saying, look, if you pass that, we're just going to leave your country. We won't produce here anymore. We're going to go off somewhere else or whatever the threat is. And so they hold a very real power. You've got governments looking at that going, we're going to get voted out. And then we're not going to have any power anyway if the people realise that we're now screwing employment opportunities or whatever. So they're stuck there. Like businesses really kind of have them. And then conversely, if they do something that is really unpopular with people.
Yeah. They move too fast.
Exactly. They'll get voted out.
Yes.
And so we say that, oh, the government needs to do this and that. But actually, we, the citizens, I still feel like it's us with the power, because it's us that everyone's sort of looking to. Like, businesses will jump straight away as soon as there's a profit to be had, or they realize this particular line's not selling well because everyone's decided to boycott it or whatever. And likewise, governments, and this plastic bag ban is an interesting one because it's been around for years, this idea, and yet it was only, they were only brave enough to do it when they were sure that it was something that
had reached that critical mass.
Yeah, that New Zealanders were actually not just okay with it, but were actually prepared to. Because what you're saying is so true. It's like, how are we going to get out shopping? Like, it's such a huge thing for a government to step in and say, this really basic way you've got of carrying something, we're going to make illegal.
Yeah.
And so they have to be really, really sure that we've got their back on that.
Yeah. How do you know anything about the kind of history of that campaign? How it managed to get into law?
Yeah, well, a little bit, yeah. It was...
When did this movement away from plastic bags start sort of in earnest? Has this been a thing bubbling away in New Zealand for, like, decades?
Yes, or? I think it would be safe to say decade, but then it's when you start getting to that point where it bursts out of the sustainability movement and into your just your regular normal person.
Yeah, when the Herald starts reporting on it.
Yeah, and when you go to Christmas with the family and people are actually talking about it.
Yeah.
And so I think that has been something that's happened quite quickly.
Yeah.
It feels quick. Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully speed will come to other issues as well.
And I feel like it will. And I just wanted to throw in there, actually, when you mentioned that there's been a couple of really key campaigns as well. And then, like, Bags Not have been amazing.
What are they?
They were a campaign that came on board, I'm not quite sure exactly when, but about maybe a year or so before the announcement that we were going plastic bag free. Mm-hmm. And their whole purpose was to campaign and get your average New Zealander to connect with the issue, sign a petition. They got they're part of a wider movement. They mm-hmm. got an amazing number of petitions signed and went off to Parliament, and that was the clincher, I think,
right,
for Jacinda to see that the sheer number. She said she completely underestimated just how much of an issue it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's so cool.
Yeah. And apparently there were Kiwis. Lots of children involved as well. That was something that she mentioned when she made her press release. She said she couldn't believe the amount of children that had been writing in talking about the dolphins and the marine environment. And
that's really neat.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it has been around for a long time. It's not necessarily... like if you got a bunch of experts in the room and said, what is the one thing that we should have banned? It might not be plastic bags. It might have been something else. But I don't think that matters at all.
This is one that it's bad. It's undeniably bad. Even if it's not number one, it's on the list of villains.
It's a shocker. But I guess what I mean in terms of saying it doesn't matter actually sort of where... Because I have heard people kind of going, oh, well, you know, they... it's not really that important compared to this other big issue or whatever.
So that argument of like, oh, we're banning plastic bags, like, but we should be focused on child poverty or something.
Yeah. So I think the thing in terms of sustainability and for us as a nation is that it's this enormousness of a big issue that's going to affect our daily lives, and that we're all together in it saying, yeah, all right, let's make a change and... do something for the environment that we know is going to be really powerful. And then once you've done that once, because that's the thing, there isn't any difference between a disposable or a single-use plastic bag and those ones on the fruit and veg department on the roll.
Yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
And once the penny drops...
Yes.
Then, and so we're going, okay, well, maybe I can, because these little net bags that you can buy for fruit and veg, so then, you know, that might be the next step. And then one day you realize, well, hang on a minute,
this
what about...
This is such a good point, and I hadn't ever considered this with the plastic bag ban, but it's going to be such a psychological difference for New Zealanders.
So. Yeah,
and they'll start looking at the products in the aisles. Individually wrapped, you know, fun-sized chocolate bars or... This is the worst one I've ever seen. A bag of marshmallows where each marshmallow was individually in its own plastic wrap.
No.
And I was like, this is the saddest, most infuriating thing I've ever seen in my life. So, but you're right. When I was growing up, we were not attuned to this sort of stuff. No. But as time goes on and these sorts of campaigns come into the public consciousness and these petitions arise, even if they don't affect legislation per se, it's great that this one did, but it's still that behavioural change that just makes you think and you see stuff and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
It's going to like turn everyone on to starting to look at their shopping a bit differently.
Yeah, I think so. And then, yeah, like you say, like that people connecting with their power to influence as well, like whether it's through the way you shop or whether it's supporting really the government. I think in well, I guess depending on who's been voted in, but often on what they want to do anyway, but yeah, feel like they have their hands tied. Or
there's a lot of power that comes from a win, isn't there? Like when you get environmentalists for this particular thing, environmentalists who go, holy crap, who expected that to work in this time frame? What else can we do? What's the next thing?
Yeah,
and then you start advocating for another change.
Good space, yeah.
Oh, that this is so nice, because after the palm oil one, it seemed like we needed something a little bit positive. Yeah. So this has actually worked out to be a great tonic for that.
Yeah, that it's good. It is good. And the other cool thing about it is that we've got, I don't know if it's hit you, but a huge, or if you've engaged with it, but actually this enormous confusion around some of the sort of eco-friendly packaging, like bioplastics.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff. Like, you
take
might,
me through it.
What? You might buy, say, a bag.
Yeah.
Oh, you know those plastic bags with the little frog on them?
Yeah. A little green frog logo. Yep. Yeah. And it's got like the arrows around it, I think.
Like a recycling thing. So they say, they used to say on their bag that they're a degradable plastic bag.
Okay.
And recently I checked them out and now they say biodegradable. Anyway, the thing about these guys, and not, I don't mean to villainize them at all, this is just the whole packaging sector is just completely rife with it, is that they have taken some words that we don't have, like, legal definitions around, like biodegradable, degradable, compostable.
There's no legal definition of what that means.
And so, which means that you can use it for anything. You could legally say that styrofoam was biodegradable.
Because there's no standard, legally speaking, that you can prove it right or wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think you might be able to take someone to court and have a try, but
This is sort of probably a common sense thing if you use styrofoam.
Yeah, surely, yeah. But they're just whacking that on anything? Yeah, so, well, they've got so in terms, if you look at it on the molecular level, the plastic, big long, long strings of, what is it, carbon? I don't know.
You tell me, ma'am.
I don't know.
I'm
supposed to be.
Chemist, I am none.
I hated chemistry at school. But long, long strings of molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, they add something to it that basically chops them up. So rather than it looking like a plastic bag for thousands of years, it will degrade, as in break up, not biodegrade, as in return to the earth.
Yeah.
So it doesn't change anything about it.
It doesn't re-enter that good carbon cycle that all organic matter does.
In fact, it just breaks down quicker into what we were talking about before, where you've got the little plastic molecules.
In my head, I'm thinking of them as like microbeads. Is that
but just way, way smaller.
Way
like,
smaller.
Can't see them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they've just added this component into it to make it break up really fast in the environment, which of course is worse than a regular plastic bag. Because at least if you just had one bag, that's going to be way more, safer for just maybe one animal might get caught up in it as opposed to thousands.
God.
So those guys with their so-called biodegradable bag, and then a whole bunch of other companies that are actually making quite good products that were genuinely compostable bags, like as in home compostable, because you can get a lot of products that say they're compostable, and they are if you've got access to a commercial facility, which of course we don't. Well, it actually depends where you're listening, but most New Zealand listeners wouldn't. So that can be quite tricky too. You've bought something and you think, oh great, I can throw it in my compost heap, and then of course it won't break down. So,
man, I have a real life example of this.
Yeah.
My old flatmate, who I used to live with, kept buying coffee cups that said biodegradable on them and just putting them in
that's the perfect example.
Our normal compost. I was like, stop fucking putting it in there, dude, because it doesn't, it just stays the cup.
Yeah.
And it's in all the grass clippings.
And whereas he would have been like saying, oh, it says on it that it's compostable.
Yeah.
And fair play. But really, we need much better.
People need to come, and directions.
They just need to come to the party and just write on it quite clearly how you just dispose of it.
So what is the difference between a commercial composter and the one that I've got around the side of the house?
It's heat. So a commercial compost gets up really nice and high. So they are able to break down. So there's a polymer called PLA, PLA is a molecule that is made from vegetables, but it's been manipulated into such a way that it looks and acts like plastic. So that's, if you ever see those like smoothie cups with a shiny plastic lid or whatever, but it says compostable, that's PLA.
And is that good or bad?
Well, it's just what it is. It is genuinely still a vegetable. So if you were to put that in the plastic recycling, it's the same as throwing a banana in. And a lot of people don't realise that. So again, really needs to be clearly labelled. Do we need some understanding?
Hold on, what happens if you put a banana in with your recycling? Is that bad?
Yeah. So if you put in anything organic, let's say banana, into your recycling, if it, say, were to go in with a plastic bale, and it ends up getting recycled. And I've been to the factories where they make plastic bottles and I've seen it with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. They have, if it's not good enough recycled content, they end up with these little black organic streaks. They just turn it into these black streaks and they just have to throw out big, big batches.
Oh.
So you don't want to be accidentally putting this PLA into the recycling.
Ah.
Yeah. And that is something that is really confusing for consumers. And then... Can I ask,
the PLA, does that mean if it's made from vegetables?
Yeah.
So can I put that in my compost and it'll break down?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the thing, you know, we said, is it good or bad?
Yes.
So this is the other thing about PLA is that it's too robust. It won't break down in your home compost, which is that problem you were having with your compostable coffee cups.
Yeah, right.
And so it's got a PLA lining. And
that's the thing that probably keeps the water, being soggy.
Although there are genuinely good ones as well. But it's just so confusing. I think with coffee, the easiest thing is to sit down and just have your coffee.
But anyway, so PLA.
So what you can do with it, this is actually the only thing you can do with PLA, because of course, remember what I was saying before about putting something biodegradable, like something that has been alive, mm-hmm. which PLA has been alive because mm-hmm. it's from a vegetable. Mm-hmm. Remember what I was saying about what happens to that if it goes to the landfill?
Yeah.
So it's actually really bad to put it in the landfill as well.
Because without the proper sort of oxygenation or air flowing through it,
turns
it doesn't.
To methane and leachate. Okay. Yeah. So all you can do with PLA that isn't actually like a diabolical option is to put it in an industrial composting facility. And the problem is we don't typically have access to that.
God damn it.
Yeah. So it's kind of a cool thing. And if you're ever at an event and they've got, because often they will have PLA stuff at events because everything's just disposable.
Yeah.
Typically, well, I guess it depends if it's like a zero waste event and they're actually kind of managing their waste. But off the events that I've been going to in Auckland recently, behind the scenes, they're, well, put it this way, if they've got the three bins out the front, so you've got a recycling bin, a composting bin, and a landfill bin, mm-hmm. at an event, if they've got a composting bin, that will all probably be going to a commercial composting facility.
Which is good.
So that'll be the one chance you get to use PLA as much as you like and throw it in the compost and be all good.
How do we at an individual level get access to that? Getting our stuff into a commercial
we
composter.
Can't. That is the crux with what's the problem
with PLA. That's a breakdown in the whole chain.
Yeah, that's a massive issue. And so that actually comes back to the plastic bag ban. And they have not only banned plastic, they've banned bioplastic as well in terms of a single-use plastic bag.
And that was right to do for the problems that you've outlined with, like, when we put that in a landfill, it creates all the methane.
That's right. And the, PLA. Like if it was a genuinely compostable one, like cornstarch, they always look and feel a bit different if it's one that actually will break down in your home compost.
Yeah.
So they are technically fine, but I think the real problem is if you go back to those frog guys, is that unless you're going to be really hardcore with legislating and being like a real cop in this field around, because this is what's going to be the next thing that's going to happen. If we ban plastic bags, but we don't ban all of those other things, everyone's just going to be saying, oh, my product's great because of this and that. And we're all going to have to become chemists to know whether it's cool or not. Whereas if you just go, you know what, guys, let's just not use a single-use bag. Like, in a world that's running out of resources, to design a whole bunch of stuff for single use it doesn't matter what way you cut it, it's not a great idea, whether it's cornstarch or what.
Yeah. What is the takeaway from this? What would you say is the one thing that people should do to be able to make a positive impact related to the single use bags thing? We've already had in New Zealand, in our country, we've changed the law, which is fantastic. Mm. What is the ideal?
Just set yourselves up with some bags, some good jute, canvas, hessian, something that's great, durable but natural, that can be returned to the earth when you're done.
Get a bag of some organic materials.
Yes, that's people. The take-home. That's the actual take-home message.
Great. We'll make it the last thing that we say on this podcast so you remember it. Use a bag made of organic materials. Thank you so much to our podcast sponsor, Huckleberry. Find them online at huckleberry.co.nz for organic produce, whole food groceries, top quality supplements, and sustainable home and personal care products delivered to your door.